The views expressed on the following broadcasts do not necessarily reflect those of KHLT, Take 12 Radio, or our affiliates. The opinions on this show should not be considered as medical, psychological, or professional advice and are those of the host, co-host, and guest. Take 12 Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting are not affiliated with any particular 12-step fellowship.
One day at a time with its failures and fears. Portion of pain and burden of care, we must meet.
Welcome to Walking Through the Language of the Heart, a journey into the grapevine writings of Alcoholics Anonymous co-founder Bill W. And now, here are your co-hosts, Chris S. and the Monty Man.
That's right. That's right. I am your host, the Monty Man, and Chris S. is on the line with us. I'm pumped about this episode of Walking Through the Language of the Heart for several reasons. And one of them is I kind of thrive on controversy, so I'm not sure we don't read this stuff ahead of time, listeners, so I'm not sure where this is going to take us. But I'm hoping we can have some fun with it. Chris, what do you think?
We're going to get some mail on this one, I'm sure.
So this article... listeners, is one of the articles in the book, The Language of the Heart. This is an article written, a grapevine article written by Bill W. Back in 1958. And what's it called there, Chris?
Problems Other Than Alcohol.
So I have to say, I want to preface the show this week by saying this. I remember quite a while back, some poor guy in an AA meeting happened to be talking about drugs rather vividly, or I should say narcotics rather vividly. And the poor guy, this guy got up at the smoke break and went over to this gentleman and he pulled this little white book out of the rack and he shoved it under his nose and said, "Dude, you need to read this. And don't share until you've read this." And that was my introduction to the pamphlet, Problems Other Than Alcohol. And I watched this poor guy kind of shrink down, you know. He was really embarrassed. But, yeah, and since then, I've seen interactions like that in meetings before. Most of the time, it's been pretty gentle, but every once in a while, you get a right fighter in there.
Yeah, you know, I had a similar experience. I'm about 1 year sober, my sponsor tells me, "You're going to start carrying the message into the treatment center." There was a local treatment center.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was called the Bridge Group. And what we were trying to do is we were trying to bridge the gap between treatment and 12-step fellowship, right?
Yeah.
And so we would bring a meeting in. And this one guy shows up at the meeting, one of the people who was helping to run the meeting. And he had some time. And he pulled out that pamphlet. And my sponsor, who was with me at that time, got furious. What he basically said was, "That doesn't apply anymore. You know, you can't find an alcoholic that hasn't done drugs that's brand new anymore." And he went into this big tirade. Now what I understand from years' experience is that there's a singleness of purpose, there's a primary purpose, and there's really good reasons for it. And the reasons aren't to keep the slimy drug addicts out. That's not the reason for our primary purpose. Our primary purpose, I'm sure Bill is going to be explaining a little bit in this article. And the pamphlet isn't this long. I think the pamphlet is an abbreviated version of this particular article.
All right.
So anyway, let's get started. Remember, this is February 1958.
Yeah.
If I know my history, NA was just brand new at
yes.
that period of time. So the first 12-step fellowship was just brand new and only in very select areas in the late 50s. So let's see what he has to say here. Perhaps there is no suffering more horrible than drug addiction, especially that kind which is produced by morphine, heroin, and other narcotics. We would say opiates today because of the plethora of opiate drugs. Such drugs twist the mind, and the awful process of withdrawal racks the sufferer's body. Compared with the addict and his woes, we alcoholics are pikers. Barbiturates carried to extremes can be almost as bad. In AA, we have members who have made great recoveries from both the bottle and the needle. We also have a great many others who were or still are victimized by goofballs and even by the new tranquilizers. So right in this first paragraph, he's saying that, you know, if you're a heroin addict, that's not going to preclude you from AA membership, but the bottle is important as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the bottle is going to come first in Bill's mind. Consequently, this problem of drug addiction in its several forms lies close to us all. It stirs our deepest interest and sympathy. In the world around us, we see legions of men and women who are trying to cure or to escape their problems by this means. Many AAs, especially those who have suffered these particular addictions, are now asking, what can we do about drugs within our fellowship and without? Because several projects help the pill and drug takers already afloat, projects which use AA's 12 steps and in which AA members are active, there has arisen a whole series of questions as to how these efforts, already meeting with not a little success, can be rightly related to the AA groups and to the AA as a whole. Specifically, here is a list of questions. Number one, can a non-alcoholic pill or drug addict become an AA member? Two, can such a person be brought as a visitor to an open AA meeting for help and inspiration? Three, can a pill or drug taker who also has a genuine alcoholic history become a member of AA? Four, can AAs who have suffered both alcoholism and addiction form themselves into special purpose groups to help other AAs who are having drug trouble? Five, could such a special purpose group call itself an AA group? Six, could such a group also include non-alcoholic drug users? If so, should these non-alcoholic pill or drug users be led to believe that they have become AA members? Eight, is there any objection if AAs who have had the dual problem join outside groups such as Addicts Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous? Those are some good questions,
mm-hmm.
and I have a feeling he's going to answer them. Now, you know, understand this is Bill's experience up to 1958. He was a very compassionate person. I think he wanted the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous to grow. So his answers to some of these questions are not, I don't think they're going to be self-serving. I think that they are going to be in the addict's best interest and the alcoholic's best interest. I truly believe that today.
I don't think these questions stand on their own. I think there was probably people asking these questions already, right?
I'm sure there were.
And that's why he's bringing it up.
Yeah, drugs aren't a new problem.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In the 1800s, opiates were laudanum and things like that. You could buy them over the counter. You know, so in the West, if you ever watched that HBO show Deadwood, you know, it showed a lot of the women, like, you know, drinking I think it was some type of an opium all the time, and you know, that's historically accurate. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it was prescribed for hysteria. You know, something women seem to get a lot of. You know, and the male doctors would diagnose hysteria and you know prescribe them, codeine or laudanum or some kind of drug to calm them down.
You know, it's funny you say that because I remember when I was taking my board certification training for a recovery mentor thing. One of the classes that we had was on Bedlam and the psychiatric centers and so forth of old. And when women, I'm kind of going down a rabbit trail here, but when women would get overly upset with their husbands, lots of times they drag their wives to these doctors and they would put them in these so-called help centers, which were nothing more than literally bedlam. I mean, it was horrible. They'd go through shock treatment or they'd give them opiates or whatever to calm, like you said, calm them down. And that was the treatment. And all they were doing is they were just getting pissed off because they got tired of their husband who's cheating on them. I mean, it was wild stuff.
So the husband gets a big bottle of
water
and chill out.
Take this, honey.
You're overreacting. So that really was a real thing.
Yeah.
So it says, while some of these questions almost answer themselves, others do not. But all of them, I think, can readily be resolved to the satisfaction of everyone if we have a good look at the AA traditions which apply, and another look at our long experience with special purpose groups in which AAs are active today, both within and without our society. Now, there are certain things that AA cannot do for everybody, regardless of what our service several desires or sympathies may be. Our first duty as a society is to ensure our own survival. Therefore, we have to avoid distractions and multi-purpose activity. An AA group as such cannot take on all the personal problems of its members, let alone the problems of the whole world. You know, I was in a deep conversation, half argument, with somebody recently, Monty, who truly, truly believes that trauma is the root cause of not only alcoholism and addiction, but all the
everything else. Yeah.
All the other emotional, turbulence that somebody has. And he literally was going into these AA meetings and telling them that if they don't start dealing with trauma, they're never going to be able to fix this problem of alcoholism. And he truly, truly believed this stuff. And I kind of told him that, AA helps alcoholism where it concerns drinking. Doesn't fix everything, right?
Right.
But you know, we don't say that we cure cancer. We don't say
yeah.
it just be a great place for you to grieve over the loss of a loved one. We don't say any of that stuff. We stick to a singleness of purpose. And I tried to have that discussion with this individual, and it unfortunately it got nowhere. But I've become a singleness of purpose person through compassion, not through exclusion. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. So we can point people in a direction where they can get qualified help. I mean, we're doing a person a disservice. Can you imagine the chairperson trying to interject suggestions on how to handle certain co-occurring mental health issues that don't have any history themselves? That's crazy, right?
It would be malpractice at a level.
Oh my gosh!
No one has ever experienced before. Absolutely. But I'll tell you what: if you can't stop drinking, you can talk to me. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Because I've been there, and that's what Bill is talking about.
Well, and Chris, the other thing of it here is too, it kind of goes back to when somebody says, well, if you don't, if you're not dealing with the trauma, or if you're not dealing with this or that, and we got to be careful that we're not turning around and teaching people to use their own intellect again and figure it out. Because here we go again. No human power. So all the science and education that we can gather is going to be helpful, I'm sure. And I know there's some very specialized area when it comes to mental health treatment. But bottom line is the creator is the one who's going to be our solution to all of this stuff. And it, whether it's narcotics or alcohol or sex or shopping or whatever, the symptoms are all different. But the core issue is still the same. And that's, I've got a God-shaped hole and I'm trying to fill it with everything else but God. And I'm adamant about that. But, here's the thing. I don't go to my pastor, who's not an alcoholic, to help me treat my alcohol issues. And I don't go to the chairperson at AA to help me study the Bible.
Yeah.
But we've got both places. They're available. We have mental health facilities. We have AA meetings. So I don't know why we try to be everything to everybody. That's very interesting to me. Maybe it's a power thing.
You know, I've been watching for a long time, a million treatment centers. I've been watching a million meetings, right? And this is what I believe. And I'm not the first to believe this. I believe that alcoholism in of itself rests in my mind.
Yeah.
And so I want information to be able to figure it out. Monty, you can't fix the problem with the problem.
Right.
So it's not something that your mind is going to be able to fix. It's more behavior modification than anything else. We're going to ask you to take spiritual steps. We're going to ask you to abide by spiritual principles. We're going to want to see you at meetings. We're going to want you to interact with other people in the fellowship. And all of that stuff, what it does is it creates the environment wherein the power has a clear channel to do what the power does. But I had to come to believe that. I wanted all the books. When I was in early on, Monty, I wanted all the books. I wanted to listen to the tapes. I wanted to figure this out. I'm a failed intellectual, and I'm smarter than normal people. I would say to myself, I'll figure this out easy, and that's not what happened. Until I started to behave differently, I did not start to open the channel enough. So the sunlight of the spirit could do what the sunlight of the spirit does.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So here's a paragraph. Here's a paragraph that I love. Okay. This is in the pamphlet and I use this at workshops and everything else. I love this paragraph. Sobriety - freedom from alcohol - through the teaching and practice of the 12 steps is the sole purpose of an AA group. Monty, what is the sole purpose of an AA group?
To help you develop a relationship with a power greater than yourself to help you solve your problem.
And how do you do that?
Through
teaching and practicing the 12 steps.
Yeah, through application and implementation of the spiritual principles laid out in 1 through 12.
Absolutely. So I'm going to read that again because I like the way I read it. Sobriety, freedom from alcohol through the teaching and practice of the 12 steps is the sole purpose of an AA group.
There it is.
So if you got bingo or something else going on, you know what I mean? No, the sole purpose of an AA group is the teaching and practice of the 12 steps. If you're not hearing about the 12 steps in your group, change groups.
Yes.
Get out of there. Because there are groups where they really think it's a bad Bob Newhart.
Yeah. Yep.
Therapy. Well, let me tell you about today. Oh, today was terrible. Blah, 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 blah. Share. All right. Well, how have you applied the steps? Because I'm coming to this meeting to be taught about the steps. How are you teaching me about the steps? That's the sole purpose of this group. What are you doing if you're just updating us on the current dysfunction du jour in your life? What are you doing?
Yeah, and yet there are people that would say, no, the teaching of the steps, that's between you and your sponsor. You need to come here in this meeting, and you need to be able to feel like you have a safe place to fall apart.
Yeah, here's where you come to share your problems. And I believe in this so much, and I am comfortable, and I get nourishment from meetings that teach and practice the steps.
Amen.
I go to other meetings to see if I can be of help, to see if I can pick up a new guy or whatever. You always got to have one bad meeting in your weekly repertoire. So
no problem brother.
We're gonna get some mail, Mike. So groups have repeatedly tried other activities besides the teaching and practice of the 12 steps, and they have always failed.
Yeah.
What part of always failed is hard to understand. It has also been learned that there is no possible way to make non-alcoholics into AA members. We have to confine our membership to alcoholics, and we have to confine our AA groups to a single purpose. If we don't stick to those principles, we shall almost surely collapse. And if we collapse, we cannot help anyone.
I already know what somebody's thinking right now. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. Somebody is saying that right now. And whoever you are, I get it. But that is so out of context. I mean, I can have a desire to stop drinking and not be an alcoholic. True?
So he put that in the tradition because he understood that we were alcoholics.
Right?
I mean, it didn't need to be said. It was like the title.
So I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic, and I need to have the desire to quit drinking. It's not open to anybody that has the desire to quit drinking that's not an alcoholic.
Here's a funny one, Monty. I don't have a desire to stop drinking.
There you go.
I stopped.
Because you stopped.
I stopped.
Oh, you lost your membership.
I'm not drinking. I haven't had a drink in 34 years.
Rip up your card.
I have a desire to not start.
Yeah.
You know, so what this requirement is he wants alcoholics that want to get over drinking to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, not alcoholics that bring a six pack. That's really what this is saying.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he's saying alcoholics. To illustrate, let's review some typical experiences. Years ago, we hoped to give AA membership to our families and to certain non-alcoholic friends who had been greatly helpful. They had their problems too, and we wanted them in our fold. Regretfully, we found that this was impossible. They couldn't make straight AA talks, nor, save for a few exceptions, could they identify with new AA members. Hence, they couldn't do continuous 12-step work. To us, as these good folks were, we had to deny them membership. We could only welcome them at our open meetings. So I've noticed this, listen, people who have very little alcohol history but a lot of drug history show up in the rooms, Monty. And I don't know about you, but I'm not the tradition police. I'm not the Inquisition, you know.
Yeah.
Are you really alcoholic? I'm just not that guy. That's not a fight I'm gonna have. But what I have seen is when they share or they tell their story, it isn't a good AA talk. It isn't a good AA share.
Mm-hmm.
I also know that when they work with other members, they are not convinced themselves that they need to live these 12 steps. So they're not going to carry that message to anybody. You know, they're just going to tell them to keep coming to meetings or something. So they're not going to make good sponsors or good 12-steppers. And to do continuous 12-step work, you know, right in the chapter working with others, it tells you how to take somebody through the 12
yeah.
steps. That's your continuous 12-step work.
Chris, I need to interject here. So I may have mentioned this before, but there was a person recently that asked me some question. They said, I don't know how to do this thing. I don't know how to do it. I said, well, there's a chapter called How It Works. I don't know how to work with others. There's a chapter working with others. But I'm agnostic. There's a chapter we agnostic. I mean, it's there. It's all there. And you're right. My experience has been people that are narcotic addicts, food addicts, porno addicts, and alcoholic, they don't seem to sit down and really apply and implement this process like the alcoholic who really sees that that's really his biggest problem. I just, the people I've tried to work with, they're the flaky ones, man. They just flake out.
I've had the experience where, you know, someone was addicted to heroin, but, you know, they had an alcoholic history. There's no doubt about it. And if they got serious about the 12 steps, you know, they could recover. And then they were a little bit more helpful than I would be with people with the same problem with mm-hmm. dual addictions. So, but if you come into AA and you don't take your alcoholism as front and center, number one priority, you know, you're going to bounce between 12-step fellowships. I know a lot of them. You know, I go to Al-Anon and I go to Adult Children and I do NA sometimes. I do AA. And they don't do any steps, you know.
Right,
they're gonna have a messed up emotional life, and they're not gonna really understand why, because you don't understand the steps until you've experienced them. You don't know what good
yeah.
they will do you until you take them. So anyway, let me keep reading. Therefore, I see no way of making non-alcoholic addicts into AA members. Experience says loudly that we can admit no exceptions. Even though drug users and alcoholics happen to be first cousins of a sort, if we persist in trying this, I'm afraid it will be hard on the drug user himself as well as on AA. We must accept the fact that no non-alcoholic, whatever his affliction, can be converted into an alcoholic AA member. So we can't make you alcoholic by giving you membership.
Yeah.
You have to earn your alcoholism with some drinking. Right, Bonnie?
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I sure did. Suppose, though, that we are approached by a drug addict who nevertheless has a genuine alcoholic history. There was a time when such a person would have been rejected. Many early AAs had the almost comical notion that they were pure alcoholics, guzzlers only, no other serious problems at all. When alcoholic ex-cons and drug users first turned up, there was much pious indignation. What will people think, chanted the pure alcoholics. Happily, this foolishness has long since evaporated. One of the best AAs I know is a man who had been 7 years on the needle before he joined up with us. But prior to that, he had been a terrific alcoholic, and his history proved it. Therefore, he could qualify for AA, and this he certainly did. Since then, he has helped many AAs and some non-AAs with their pill and drug problems. Of course, that is strictly his affair and is no way the business of the AA group to which he belongs. In his group, he is a member because, in actual fact, he's an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
I sponsored this guy, T. God love him. You know, he died of cancer about 8 years ago. Man, did I love this guy. He showed up in Alcoholics Anonymous, and he had been on heroin. He had been injecting heroin for 10 years. And, you know, I was fairly new. I maybe had 3 years sober when I started sponsoring him. And I knew that there was an issue with that. You know, he might be a little different than us. But when he did his fifth step with me, what I found out was in the 70s, he was drinking like a fish, and his liver got enlarged, and he ended up in the hospital, and the doctor told him, you got to stop drinking. So he goes, okay, and he picks up heroin. And the heroin eclipsed the obsession compulsion to put alcohol in his body because heroin is a very powerful drug, and he got hooked on the heroin. Now, when he showed up in Alcoholics Anonymous, he even thought he was a heroin addict first and an alcoholic second. But really what it was the internal cause and condition of his alcoholism and his drinking were alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he responded, he did the steps, he did his amends, he was working with others like a maniac, and he brought a recovery message to people I couldn't touch with a 10-foot pole, just like this paragraph says about Bill's friend in 1958.
So you might say that he used heroin alcoholically.
So heroin is one drug that I know from personal experience will wipe out the obsession of the mind to put alcohol in your body and the physical craving to keep drinking. It's strong enough to do that. However, it comes with its own warning label.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, you got to use it constantly, and it's a mess. But yeah, it can set aside one's alcoholism while you're on it. It's one of the only things that I've ever seen that can do that. So you can go into the parking lot on heroin for quite a period of time, and you don't look alcoholic. But stop everything, and believe me, the alcohol is going to come back. The alcoholism is always there, and it's going to be a big mess.
Mm.
Such is the sum of what AA cannot do for narcotic addicts or anyone else. Now then, what can be done? Very effective answers to problems other than freedom from alcohol have always been found through special purpose groups, some of them operating within AA and some on the outside. Our first special purpose group was created back in 1938. AA needed a World Service Office and some literature. It had a service problem that could not be met by an AA group as such. Therefore, we formed a board of trustees, the Alcoholic Foundation, to look after these matters. Some of these trustees were alcoholics and some were non-alcoholics. Obviously, this was not an AA group. Instead, it was a group of AAs and non-AAs who devoted themselves to a special task.
Mm.
Another example, in 1940 in New York, the New York AAs got lonesome and installed themselves in a club. The club had directors and dues-paying AA members. For a long time, the club members and directors thought that they were an AA group. But after a while, it was found that lots of AAs who attend meetings at Old 24 didn't care one hoot for the club as such. Hence, the management of the club, for its social purpose, had to be completely separated from the management of the AA group that came there to hold its meetings. It took years of hassling to prove that you couldn't put an AA group into a club business and make it stick. Everywhere today, club management and their dues-paying members are seen as a special purpose group, not as AA groups. So the AA groups meet in the clubhouse.
Sure.
The operational management of the clubhouse is a special purpose group. The same thing has happened with drying out places, 12-step houses managed by AAs. So at this period of time, there was Elena Lodge,
mm-hmm.
Where I have a service commitment. There was High Watch. You know, there was a couple of places around the country, a lot of them. I wouldn't even know their names because they didn't survive very long, but they were 12-step houses managed by AAs, drying out farms, where they would take you through the steps while you were out on a farm and you couldn't escape. that's really the birth of alcoholism treatment. We never think of these activities as AA groups. They are clearly seen as the functions of interested individuals who are doing helpful and often very valuable jobs. Some years ago, numbers of AAs formed themselves into retreat groups having a religious purpose. So this would be the Matt Talbot retreats or whatever.
Okay,
right?
Yeah.
At first, they wanted to call themselves AA groups of various descriptions, but they soon realized that this could not be done because their groups had a dual purpose, both AA and religion. At another time, a number of us AAs wanted to enter the field of alcoholism education. I was one of them. We associated ourselves with some non-alcoholics likewise interested. The non-alcoholics wanted AAs because they needed our experience, philosophy, and general slant. Things were fine until some of us AAs publicly disclosed our membership in the educational group. Right away, the public got the idea that this particular brand of alcoholic education and Alcoholics Anonymous were one and the same thing. It took years to change this impression. But now that this correction has been made, plenty of AA members work with this fine group, and we are glad that they do. And that would be the NCAPD,
gotcha.
a group that I'm very, very active in. It was thus proven that, as individuals, we can carry the AA experience and ideas into any outside field whatsoever, provided that we guard anonymity and refuse to use the AA name for money raising or publicity purposes. He's bringing some more of the traditions into it. I'm very sure that these experiences of yesterday can be the basis of resolving today's confusions about the narcotic problem. This problem is new, but the AA experience and tradition which can solve it is already old and time-tested. I think we might sum it up like this. We cannot give AA membership to non-alcoholic narcotics addicts, but like anyone else, they should be able to attend certain open AA meetings, provided, of course, that the groups themselves are willing. You know, some groups have policies where if you're not an alcoholic, please just listen. Don't put a dollar in the basket. You know, you're not to share. So I know some open groups that, you know, have that right in their preamble. AA members who are so inclined should be encouraged to band together in groups to deal with sedative and drug problems. Wow. So AA members who are so inclined should be encouraged to band together in groups to deal with sedative and drug problems, but they ought to refrain from calling themselves AA groups. That's all. Just don't call yourself an AA group.
There you go.
You know, I had a sponsee. I still have him. He's one of my favorite men on earth. That came to me in 2001, and he said, "Chris, I gotta help addicts, man. And, you know, I'm an addict and I'm an alcoholic, but I gotta help addicts. I just have to. And I'm going to NA meetings, and they won't let me use the big book. And that's where my experience is. And they get really upset if I try to use the big book working with an NA member." So I said to him, start your own 12-step group. Start your own 12-step group. This was before any other groups that I knew of were using the big book. So he started this thing called DAA. He started this thing called ANA. That was the letters. ANA, Alcoholics Narcotics Anonymous, right? Mm-hmm. So he started this group, and he got a bunch of people, a bunch of people who had alcohol history, but they were also narcotics addicts, mainly narcotics addicts, and they started coming and they started recovering, and all of a sudden the NA people showed up, they threatened to sue the group because the group was starting to put out flyers and stuff. They threatened to sue the group because Narcotics and Anonymous was right next to each other, and they saw a copyright infringement. So we had to do something, right? So the idea I came up with was, why don't we call it ANARAA? So a National Association of Recovered Alcoholics and Addicts. And so ANA became ANARAA, and then NA couldn't do anything about it. And that started up, and meetings ended up in Canada, they ended up in Iceland, they ended up in Russia, they ended up in Scandinavia. This thing started on my back porch.
Wow.
It grew into all these different countries and states. Now, the mistake that was made was, yeah, they used the book Alcoholics Anonymous as a recovery tool. They did not take seriously or implement the 12 traditions. And they didn't use good home group mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how you have to hold a home group together. So what it became was a way of sponsoring, a way of taking somebody through the steps. So a lot of these other countries didn't have ANA RAA meetings. They had ANA RAA sponsors.
Gotcha.
And those were simply people who would open up the big book and take you through the steps. You know, so many of my friends went through this because, again, opiate addiction has, you know, blossomed quite a lot in the last 20, 30 years.
Sure. Yeah.
So anyway, right now there's not, I don't think there's an ANA meeting in America anymore. It served its purpose. It got a whole bunch of people to a state of recovery, and it just died out. I believe it's still, I hear it's still in Russia. I hear it's still in Iceland, and I know it's still in Canada, but that's all I know at this point. So anyway. There seems to be no reason why several AAs cannot join, if they wish, with a group of straight addicts to solve the alcohol and drug problem together. But obviously, such a dual-purpose group should not insist that it be called an AA group, nor should it use the AA name in its title. Neither should its straight addict contingent be led to believe that they have become AA members by reason of such an association. In this particular case, they were ANA members.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't AA members.
Right, right.
Separate fellowship. Certainly, there is every good reason for interested AAs to join with outside groups working on the narcotic problem, provided the traditions of anonymity and of no endorsement are respected. And if you look at the treatment field, if you look at a lot of the people who were researching in alcoholism and alcohol studies, many of them are AA members, and you'd never know it because they see those things as two separate entities. You know what I mean? In conclusion, I want to say that throughout AA's history, most of our special purpose groups have accomplished very wonderful things. There's a great reason to hope that those AAs who are now working in this grim regions of narcotic addiction will achieve equal success. In AA, the group has strict limitations, but the individual has scarcely any. Remembering to observe the traditions of anonymity and non-endorsement, the AA member can carry the AA message to every troubled area of this very troubled world. So this is also telling you, as an AA member, you can work with another, well, you can work with an addict, you can take an addict through the steps, you can do anything and everything you want to do, except lead them to believe that they can become an AA member.
Right. But other than that, you're free.
Everything's open.
Well,
it's
you,
open season.
I mean, I've sponsored several people, and not one of them is purely an alcoholic. They just aren't. I will say, though, that when you get right down to causes and conditions and all that stuff, alcohol with the guys that I work with, that's the primary thing. And
yeah. They're an ENDA, and it's okay to be an ENDA.
Yeah,
as long as you respect Alcoholics Anonymous, you know.
But, you know, one of the things that I noticed, and, you know, people have all sorts of gimmicks and ways that they introduce themselves these days and, you know, little cute little things and all. But I suppose, and see what you think of this, I've thought of this for a long time, that I suppose that maybe to really be technically correct, a person would introduce themselves as, "Hi, I'm Fred. I'm a grateful member of Alcoholics Anonymous." If they were an alcoholic and a member. They wouldn't even introduce themselves as an alcoholic. They would introduce themselves as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Isn't that
absolutely appropriate?
Yeah,
absolutely appropriate. Well, my spiritual grandfather, Don P. out of Aurora, Colorado, he would announce himself like that. "My name is Don. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous." That's how he would introduce himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how we started to admit our alcoholism, you know, maybe that goes way back to the beginning. Who knows? But it's absolutely within protocol to introduce yourself as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, if you are.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You don't have to you know, do all the dog and pony show.
So there are a lot of people that come into AA. I know several people that would rather come into an AA meeting in this area than go to the NA meetings, because there seems to be a maturity. There seems to be more consistency with working the steps. There's more big book studies and workshops and that kind of thing than there is in the NA meetings, you know, locally here. I often hear things like, I'm tired of kids flying paper airplanes in the middle of the meeting, man. Is there an AA meeting somewhere? Now, I don't want to throw NA under the bus because I know it can be different. I know down that I got friends that go to the musicians meetings down in L.A., right? And they've said before that it's flipped. It seems like the Narcotics Anonymous meetings in Southern California seem to be more mature and serious than the AA meetings. So I guess it just depends on where you're at, and things change with the geographics, you know, but it's really interesting. I think the important thing is, though, you know, we talk about we cease fighting anything or anyone. I think we can make a strong point to protect our fellowships and all that without alienating people and without damaging people's spirit.
Always remember compassion. I've been rocked by someone who's brand new, doesn't know the protocol, who identifies himself in an AA meeting as an addict, and somebody goes right at him in front of everybody.
Yeah, that's so wrong.
You know, this is a closed meeting. This is for alcohol, and shames the person right out the door. Now there's a way of managing something like that that's maybe a little bit more compassionate, you know, like, oh, okay, you seem to be new here. There's a couple of us that would like to take you aside, and we just want to talk to you a little bit, tell you a little bit about what we're about. Would you please, you know, step outside with us? You could do that. You could wait until the meeting's over and very, very politely explain that, you know, we don't have a lot of rules, but we have some best practices. And, you know, one of our best practices is that a closed meeting is really only for alcoholics. And you identified yourself as an addict. Can we talk a little bit about that? Can you tell me what your experience has been with alcohol? Can you there's a way to do it with compassion and not be a hard ass. You know what I mean?
Sure, sure. Well, good show, my friend. It was fun. We'll see what happens. So, listeners, our email is take12radio. That's TAKE, the number 12, radio at comcast.net. You can certainly email us. I'd encourage you to. If you're listening to this on YouTube, of course, you can comment in the comment section on any of the podcasting platforms that this is broadcasting on. If it allows you to comment, please comment. I'll be checking them this week to see what kind of responses we have. And if we have some interesting ones, maybe we'll talk about it next time. That would be fun. Chris, thank you so much, my friend. All right, listeners, another great show. Thank you for tuning in. Make sure you listen to the end of the broadcast so you can learn how to catch up on all of the episodes of Walking Through the Language of the Heart. Until our next broadcast, this is the Monty Man along with Chris S., and we are wishing God's perfect serenity for you. For more recovery workshops with Chris S. and the Monty Man, visit our website at take12radio.com and click on the Recovery Workshops banner.
This has been a broadcast of Take 12 Recovery Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting.
This has been a Chicken and a Pig production.
Kitty, 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 kitty. Meow, meow, meow.
Woof, woof.